So, last night we had the most important service of the year. And in it, we went from a feeling of darkness to a feeling of great light and brightness, a primal shift that caps off this whole week. It's like last night we had the main dessert, main meal, and then this morning it's all dessert. Lucky us. We just get to enjoy the sugary, exciting flavor of resurrection. Let me review where we've been by just hitting a couple of the highlights of the last week. The 10 o'clock service last week, last Sunday, the service started off with the center aisle here lined with people holding palms, with a glorious procession up into the holy place. But then it concluded with something really unusual and almost hard to do, which is that we left singing a song only in a cappella, no organ, and then went out into the courtyard in silence. The church was in silence because we were beginning Holy Week. Thursday evening, we were in this space and among doing sort of an ordinary, usual service, we had a foot washing, which was packed. I mean, it was the most busy, engaged foot washing we've ever had of people washing feet and having their feet washed following after Jesus. And then as we always do, we had this stripping of the altar, and it's so strange every year to have this space absolutely naked, bare. It fundamentally feels like this is no longer a sacred space once all that stuff is stripped away. Like it's been turned into a museum, something frozen, dead. Then Good Friday, the cross that you all passed on the way in was lying on the floor here, while nearly everybody in the church came up and hammered a nail into that cross. I mean, you could just hear it. Boom, 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 boom. So that was the context. That was the background for the way people walked into this church last night in darkness. And we went through a process where this church went from darkness to the blaze of light when we proclaimed Jesus' resurrection. Now, usually people give a report of their summer after they've done it, but I want to do it ahead of time. I want to tell you what I'm doing this summer, because this summer I am going to be able to check something, God willing, off of my bucket list, which is that I am going to go and see one of the world's great paintings, a painting I didn't even know anything about until I was in my late 20s. And it's a painting called the Isenheim Altarpiece, by a painter I hadn't even heard of until I was in my 20s, a guy named Matthias Grunewald. Grunewald was alive right around the same time as Da Vinci and Raphael and Leonardo, and in many ways is considered a peer of Albrecht Dürer, because he's a northern Renaissance painter. And he didn't paint that many paintings. There's only one in America. It's in the small painting of the Crucifixion in the National Gallery. But the Isenheim altarpiece is his masterpiece, and it's in Colmar, which is in Alsace-Lorraine. It's in one of those territories that's sometimes German and sometimes French, depending on what era you're living in. And this painting, it's an altarpiece, so it's got multiple images to it. But the one that appears most often when the altarpiece is closed is a remarkable big painting of Jesus' crucifixion. Part of what's remarkable about it is that this altarpiece was painted for a hospital. And it was painted for a hospital at the time when there was a very unusual plague that marred the skin. And Jesus on the cross is suffering from that plague so that when people came to this hospital, most of them suffering from this plague that disfigured the skin so that it almost looks like there's a whole bunch of splinters all in the skin is what the image looks like. So that when people were laid in this hospital, in a hospital bed, they were looking up at an image of Jesus suffering the same thing that they were suffering. So to translate it to today, imagine an AIDS ward where everybody's suffering from AIDS and Jesus on the cross is clearly disfigured with AIDS or with cancer or with whatever. I mean, to make it personal, imagine the greatest amount of suffering, physical suffering that you've ever been in, that you're in a room full of people suffering the same thing, looking on an extraordinary image of Jesus suffering that same thing. That's the outside of the altarpiece. But on special days, like today, that altarpiece is opened up, and on the inside, there is the most extraordinary painting that I know of Jesus' resurrection. He's coming out of a sarcophagus that's got a metal lid on it that's popped off, and the two soldiers who were to guard him have fainted from the glory that's been revealed. Jesus is coming out of the sarcophagus at an angle like this, and his hands are out like this, except I can't quite. I have this one workout thing where I pinch my feet against the corner like this, and I'm on one of those balls. And then I'm at an angle like this. It's a core strength. So imagine him at an angle, but he's up, right? He's kind of whoosh, like that, coming out of the sarcophagus. And his hands are out like this, you know, in a sign of peace. And as is traditional, and as is true, you can see the holes in his hands. He was crucified, but now he's bursting beyond that. His face has this expression of calm authority. He's just conquered death. But then, what makes it so beautiful is that in a way that is not at all Hallmark cheesy, his face dissolves, and then it's this halo of rainbow, rainbow, rainbow out to the side in the most saturated, powerful colors. Jesus resurrected from the dead, a burst of light. And part of the power of it is the pathos of the image of Jesus crucified on the outside. And then you open this thing up and sheer beauty, power, and light. The light of the resurrection. Welcome. There is much that is dark in the world. But here, we are stewards of the light, of God's light. God's first words in creation were, "Let there be light." And Jesus, who rose from the dead, before his death even, taught us by saying, "I am the light of the world." Amen.